You're listening to the Coconetics Podcast. Episode 33, recorded April 14th, 2012. Rich Texting. Hi, this is episode 33 of the Coconetics Podcast, and unfortunately, there's nothing really new this week. Everybody's still waiting for WWDC tickets to drop. And another thing that happened to me that kind of is an unfortunate event, my MacBook Air died, which is the machine that I usually use for recording the show. So I needed to move to my office, and so I hadn't really anything prepared. But fortunately, I've got friends on the internet, and one of these friends is with us today. His name is Kevin Smith. He's the co-founder of Dutrix. And they recently published an app they did for a company named Simple that allows you to build a website on your iPad. And he's here so that we will chat about core text, rich text rendering, and the experiences he had when finding how to do it. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Oliver.
So how do you do today? Kevin?
Sorry, I didn't catch you. You broke up again.
Oh, sorry. How are you today on this nice weekend?
I'm great, thank you. Yeah, good, thanks.
Thanks for being on the show. So I already said you did this app for Simple. Could you tell us what does it do and how does rich text in work in it?
Sure. Well, Simple are a great little startup that approached us to write this app. And it was specifically for the iPad. The idea is that it makes building and publishing a website a cinch. So, you know, a child or perhaps your grandma could even do it. As part of this, as part of this app, you obviously have to be able to edit the content that you want to appear on these web pages. So we looked at a number of ways of doing that and inserting links and creating bold and italic text. Initially, we were quite perplexed.
Before
the standard iOS controls didn't really have anything like that in them. They didn't have any rich text support at all. So initially, we experimented with using the web view. I think in a recent version of iOS, they allowed the web view to allow the content to be edited or editable.
Yeah, content editable.
So we got quite far with our workings with the web view, but it really didn't do quite what we wanted, and the user experience was pretty poor. Mm-hmm. So as an example, I guess. One of the things we needed to be able to do was to create hyperlinks. Mm-hmm. But when you close the dialog that we brought up to enter the link, it dismissed the keyboard, which was very annoying. And it was also fairly slow and clunky. And actually, I just think the whole experience was fairly poor. You can see this in the Evernote app as well. It kind of exhibits the same behavior. You also, unfortunately, you have the next and previous buttons appearing on the keyboard, which you don't want, and they just eat up screen real estate. We tried to get rid of them, but of course you're then modifying private view hierarchies and that's no good, and that would have got us rejected. So we started looking at alternatives. Mm-hmm. We had a look at a couple of the alternatives out there, including the Omni stuff. The Omni framework stuff, yeah, but at the time that didn't build for Xcode 4, and it was fairly buggy and inconsistent. And we also had a look at another, I think one or two other open source drop-in replacements for UI Text View. But again, they just weren't really very finished. They didn't do what we wanted, and they were quite buggy. And that's really when we came across core text. or DT Cortex.
Yeah, DT Cortex, just for the people who haven't heard about that, that's more or less Objective-C wrapper that I wrote around Cortex, which is more or less C functions. And there's one missing piece on iOS that's available on the Mac that allows you to create an NS-attributed string from an HTML string. And that's unconveniently missing on iOS. So I set out to remedy that. And, well, it's a quite, I'd say, successful project on GitHub next to 1,000 followers. And many interesting uses people have come up with for this. So it basically consists of two parts. One that creates NS-attributed strings from HTML with all the additional trimmings that you need to support inline images and even videos and most of the common CSS style attributes. And the second part is more or less displaying these. There is a CI text layer class available on iOS, but unfortunately that doesn't deal with inline images and it also doesn't properly work with paragraph styles. So if you have paragraph spacings after paragraphs, they don't just show up. So I more or less made a view that draws this text in a way that is predictable. And there's a couple of Cortex bugs that we also need to work around. Like, for example, if you have a line that breaks over multiple lines and ends with a new line character, then the last line of these broken lines will have more space. And that's a known issue in Cortex that we currently have to work around. So, well, in general, you evaluated UI WebView and found that if you do the rendering of the text yourself with Cortex, that's a better experience for you as a developer, right?
Yeah, it's a better experience for the user, really. You can check this out on the Evernote app, actually. If you try and create a link to a website, and then you dismiss that dialogue, it closes up the keyboard and chucks you back so that you have to tap on the screen again to get the keyboard up, which I just felt wasn't good enough. It wasn't what you'd want. And that's part of the way. That's one of the restrictions of UI WebView, with the way that you have to touch it to activate it. There was no way to programmatically reactivate that WebView and bring the keyboard up. And also, like I said before, you end up with the keyboard that's specifically for websites or dealing with web pages. So you've got the four buttons, the next and previous, which were superfluous for what we needed. And it's also it just felt like the wrong way to do it, to be honest. It was quite slow. There was all sorts of rendering issues that we had to work around. And like I said, we did go quite far with this content editable web view, but it just didn't cut it. So that's when we started looking for alternatives.
I remember last year's WWDC, they had all these sessions that sort of had to be determined before the first keynote, and you only would see the actual titles of the sessions after the keynote. And one of the sessions was about more or less, now we have rich text editing on iOS, but essentially this was just the introduction of the content editable of the web view.
Yeah, it was very annoying to know that all that stuff was there under the hood, but you couldn't get to it.
Well, to give a bit more in-depth information to the people who are listening who haven't looked into rich text editing so far in depth, there, if you want to have a rich text editor, there are some things that Apple provides to us, but some things are missing. One thing they provide to us You can create your own input views. So you can, for example, create your own keyboard replacement. Like for April 1st, I did a keyboard that's a Morse keyboard. So it just consists of a single key, and you can Morse code input multiple characters. That's one thing you can do. The other thing you can do, there's two protocols, one for UI key input, which is inputting of individual keystrokes. The second one is UI text input, which gives you a bit more like replacing ranges of text and also a bit of interaction with auto-correction and so on. But unfortunately, what they don't provide for us is access to the magnifying glass and for selection. So that's something we're going to mention that afterwards when we get to my richest editor. Let's continue to maybe get a bit of information where in this simple app you're actually using that. You said it's any grandma with an iPad should be able to use this app.
I mean, it's really designed to make publishing a website as simple as possible. I mean, you fire up the app and you can actually get a website online, I think, in about 3 clicks. But we use the text editing specifically for editing the content on pages where you want to create hyperlinks and headings and bold and italic text. The app actually has some predefined page templates. So say you want to create a photo page or a contact sheet. We don't use the Cortex stuff for that. But any page where you're editing an article, in effect, mm-hmm. So a news page or a text content page, we use the DT Cortex.
So I take it you don't have a syntax highlighted HTML editor in there.
No, we don't. No.
So
that was one of the options we looked at actually when we realized that there wasn't any native rich text support. We very briefly considered allowing the user to put HTML tags in there, but that was a definite no-no for the audience that we were going for.
So the audience is obviously the one that Simple have defined as their target audience, and that's all these people that are maybe getting the first iPad and are not experienced web developers, but to enable these to create websites.
Yeah, simply. Exactly. I mean, it's almost like, I don't know if you've come across the website about.me, but that's a website it's a very popular website that lets you create a contact card, effectively. That's on the web, and anyone can do it. And this is really an app that lets anyone create a very simple 5-page website. And we found that it's only been released for the last couple of weeks, but there's been a huge amount of interest. And it's small businesses, very small shops and boutiques, people that want to put online CVs up, people that are advertising bands or events, the kind of people that just want to get something up very quickly, that have absolutely no technical knowledge whatsoever, have never heard of HTML, and they're the kind of people that Simple are going after, I think.
So what do I do to get a page on Simple, and what is the connection to this about.me? That's where I lost. You lost me.
Oh, sorry. I was just using that as an example of something that lets you get your information on the web in a way that looks quite pretty and neat, mm-hmm. without having to have any technical experience. And I think Simple were going after something akin to that, where anybody could create a website without having to know they were even creating a website. I mean, you use the app, it's almost a bit like, it doesn't feel like you're creating a website. It feels like you're sort of just typing in some text and moving some boxes around.
So let's sort of assume for a moment that I'm one of these members of the target audience. What are the steps that I need to do to get something on the web with Simple?
Okay, well, the first step would be to download our Simple's app. And then immediately you'll be presented with a pre-canned 5-page website. Mm-hmm. And it will look a bit like the springboard on your iPhone or your iPad. Mm-hmm. You can publish that site straight away. It's only got demo content in it. But all you have to do, you can preview the website from a button at the bottom, and it will show you exactly what that website will look like when it's on, when it's live. Can go into the publishing section, hit the publish button, and it'll go up straight away. The only thing it'll ask you to do in between is to create an account, because you need an account with Simple before it will let you publish. So that's an additional step where you have to go off. But other than that, there's zero friction between you downloading the app and getting your website up. You can literally do it in 5 minutes.
So the thing you have to decide, except for what you put on these pages instead of the demo content, is for a name, a username, and probably the name of the site, or is this the same?
Exactly, yeah. So everyone gets a username.simple.com domain name.
Mm-hmm. If I didn't want to be under the domain of Simple, is there a way how I can have my own domain name?
There are various ways you can repoint domain names at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you need to be quite technical to do that. Mm-hmm. That is actually one of the features that have been requested, and I believe that Simple are looking at that for a future update.
Mm-hmm. So, I read on the website specifically that there is no advertisement. So how does Simple actually finance their operations?
It's a good question.
And you for developing?
Yes, there's no ads. They do charge, but they charge the price of a cup of coffee a month to have your website hosted.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everyone at the moment gets a 2-month free trial, so they can put their website up there for 2 months free of charge, but that's for a limited time. Very soon, it'll be a 2-week free trial period. And if you like it after 2 weeks, then you'll get an email and you will visit their website to subscribe. And that subscription is a monthly rolling subscription, which can be cancelled at any point.
Mm-hmm. Now, for the developers that now have their mouths watering to see this amazing app of yours, can they also play around with the app without having to create an account or a website?
They will have to create an account. Yes, they can play around with the app. They can download it. They can create a website. They can preview it all within the app and see what it would appear like live. But if they actually want to publish it to the web, they'll need to take out an account.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about how much of work the app has been? Did you work on that for a month or 2 months or years?
It was a 4-month project in the end.
Mm-hmm.
We had lots of ups and downs, actually, because originally when we created the app, we wanted it to be via in-app purchase. So you take out the subscription once you're happy,
mm-hmm.
Through in-app purchase. And we did a lot of work to make that process as smooth as possible. But we got rejected because Apple don't like you selling software as a service through in-app purchasing.
You have to have either a subscription subscriptions can only be for content, I guess.
That's right, downloadable content that's available within the app. So I'm actually writing a blog post at the moment about the experiences we had with in-app purchasing and specifically subscriptions.
So it wasn't that Simple didn't want to share. It's Apple didn't want to have this kind of income.
yeah, it's bizarre. So I can understand that where you compete with Apple's business model, like an ebook. Rival or a video download rival like Netflix, then I can see why they might have that rule. But we were creating an app that was specifically for the iPad. There was no other way to download or to access this service other than through the iPad app. So Apple would have been taking the cut of the 30%, whatever it is. But we had to take all of that out and go down a PayPal route in the end.
So once you're happy with your website, you are sort of redirected to some PayPal thing to pay for the subscription.
Yeah. So after the trial period runs out, you'll get an email and it'll ask you to sign up if you want to carry on, if you want your website to remain live, and you'll be directed to a PayPal subscription button.
But what I don't understand is how is it different from, say, Evernote or Instapaper, in a manner that you are sort of, you have a monthly payment.
Yeah.
And that gives you something. It gives you...
Well, I think the Instapaper actually came across the same problem. Unfortunately, I found a blog post by the Instapaper guy.
Marco Arment, yeah.
Yeah, too late. So he actually came across the same issue and was rejected on the same grounds. However, I think he was allowed to do it via a non-renewable subscription or something. There were just two types of subscription, and they told him he couldn't use the auto-renewable one, but he could use the other one.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reality is the rules are very grey, and I think it probably even confuses the reviewers, if I'm honest. So some apps get through, some don't, and we didn't.
Have you tried appealing it?
We didn't, no.
Because I hear really, sometimes this actually is successful, because the first level of defense, so to speak, is a reviewer, and they see many, many apps, and they are more or less black or white. Mm-hmm. But if you have a case where it's not really understandable that this gets rejected, because in all good faith, it's in line with the rules, then you could appeal it, and sometimes that works.
Yeah, I mean, we could have appealed it, but having looked at the various documentation that was available, it seemed that Apple did have this stance on software as a service and in-app subscriptions, and the two, as far as they were concerned, weren't compatible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think also, if you look at the rules, they are quite clear. They say you shall not use, or you cannot use, in-app purchasing for physical goods or services. And that was the rule that we got rejected upon, because we were offering a service. However, I think some people slip through the net and get away with it.
Well, I hear there are even people who have in-app purchases that are like a donation for our server, basically.
Yeah.
A donation for server bandwidth, and it doesn't really get you anything.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, but I think it's unfortunate. I think it would be much better if you could subscribe to software as a service through in-app purchasing. It just seems the natural way to do it. It's what you want to do, and as of yet, Apple won't allow it.
Mm. Getting back to the making of this app, you said yeah. 1 month. Is this 1 man month, or is it,
I said it
one calendar?
I didn't say
month?
1 month. No, it was. I think I said it was a 4 month project.
Okay, 4 month. But was it 4 people working for 1 month, or was it a couple of people working for 4 months?
It was. It was one person working full time on it for 4 months, and probably another person working maybe 1 or 2 months.
Mm-hmm. So did you have any dedicated designers for the visuals and the user experience, or was this all...
Simple wanted to provide all their own mm-hmm. design. So that's what we went with, what they provided us with. It's kind of a, when you're doing client work, the client gets the final say.
I forgot to mention at the start that you being the co-founder of Dutrix, you are experienced in developing mobile apps for businesses and enterprises. So
that's correct, yeah.
That's probably something that you're quite used to, that a client approaches you, has a very specific idea how the app should look like and behave like, and it's then your role to actually get this implemented.
Yeah, and we try and, you know, sometimes the ideas aren't, we don't necessarily agree with the suggestions that the client it makes, and we try and steer them to towards something which meets better with our experience. But at the end of the day, it's the client's money, and they will get what they want.
Just how exactly do you do this steering? I've seen two approaches in the wild. One was, I don't remember those guys' names, but they basically said they are only taking on projects where they, or no, they're only doing things that they more or less can defend.
Yeah.
They are saying if it's too weird or too unlike an iOS app, like for example, they would have a design that has big Windows-like buttons everywhere, then they would they would say we are not going to be associated with that, and that's not what we do. And the other end of the spectrum is obviously people saying, okay, if the client wants it, then he gets it. So Do you have some couple of tips for us how you could actually steer gently the
client?
Yeah,
well, I think we perhaps occupy the middle ground. I mean, we know what works on iOS. We know the differences between an iOS app, an Android app, and an HTML5 app, or a Windows Phone app for that matter. We know the way they look and they feel and the differences, and we certainly try and advise our clients as to the best approach, but ultimately we will advise them as to the best approach, but they're the people that are contacting us, and they will either take that advice or not. We very rarely point blank turn around and say, well, I'm sorry if that's the way you want it, we're not doing that. We just work very closely with them to ensure that they understand where we're coming from and we understand where they're coming from, and hopefully we reach a compromise.
Mm-hmm. Well, having you on air now here with me, there's another topic that's been on my mind recently that I'd like to get your opinion on. There are a couple of very prominent names, just to mention a few: Instapaper, Flipboard, and now the internationally released Google Currents. All three of these use UI web views to render their content. So what's your opinion? Do you think, if it works and they get the animations working with lots of tricks, so basically making screenshots of a part of a web view and then transitioning this with some sort of animation, and somehow they get it to work. But when I see this sort of approach being knee deep in core text myself, my heart really hurts. It's really
Well, so what's your opinion? Well, first of all, I guess it's worth saying that those apps are very different to one we worked on, because they're presenting static content. Mm-hmm. So I think in those situations, you'd certainly be more likely to take a serious look at UI web view. Mm-hmm. However, it does seem like trying to crack a nut with a sledgehammer. I mean, you shouldn't need a full-blown web browser to render some pretty text on the screen. It seems unnecessary, especially when we know that buried in text view, the bits that you can't get to, there's all this attributed text.
Mm. Well, even UI text view itself is basically wrapping a WebKit view for the rendering of the text. And the evidence for that is there is a private API method on UI text view that accepts an attributed text. It accepts HTML, an HTML string. So you can, I think it's even called set HTML string on UI text view, and that will then display as rich text.
Yes, I was aware of that. I think it was even a private API, wasn't it, that you could get to with a bit of hackery. But I was under the impression that that it under the hood it used Cortex, it didn't use a web view.
I'm under the impression that actually UI text view is just a sort of dump wrapper for UI web view.
All right. Well, you're the expert.
Well, I wouldn't bet on it now that you have seemingly a different information there. But here's one argument why it's probably a web view. There is nowhere to be found the category methods on NS attributed string that we have on the Mac, where you just say init with HTML, where then you basically can convert HTML to NS attributed string. And if this is missing from the platform, then how would the UI text view actually parse make an attributed string out of it? And if it were there, why wouldn't then Apple actually give this to us as a public API? I think what's actually happened is long time ago, Apple made the decision, okay, we need some sort of HTML support. The only HTML parsing technology that we have access to is more or less WebKit, which is open source. And so they just made a wrapper in UIKit for the regular WebKit views. And they felt, well, there's so much C++ and complexity in WebKit. You can't have the developers mess around in that. So that's why everything is private and everything is hidden away from us. And if you inspect the view hierarchy of your web view, you see a scroll view and lots of WebKit related specialty views.
Yeah, and right.
So I'm pretty sure, and I think in my experience, I even saw some calls into WebKit for the parsing of the HTML for the UI text view. So all in all, it seems that that's really the case, that WebKit is also the basis for UI text view.
Mm.
Albeit in a lighter version, because UI text views don't consume that much memory and so much of a performance problem as web views are.
Yeah, like you said, web views do seem like the heavy-handed approach.
Well, on one client project that I was on last year, they had the problem that web view would consume so much memory that if you had more than a few with a full document, the apps would run out of memory on the devices and just crash. And that's one of the reasons why I was asked to implement something based on core text, because that's far, far less of a stress on the memory.
And do you think that the Apple will release a full-blown Cortex-based control in the near future?
Well, there's this word that is used every once in a while when Apple takes a successful technology from the wild and puts it into the operating system. They call it sharelocking. Mm-hmm. And on the last WWDC, I was basically kind of on the edge of my seat to see if my Cortex work is now being sharelocked, but it wasn't. So I tweeted, still not sharelocked. But you see, it's an open source project, and I'm not making that much money with it. I'm only every once in a while somebody pays me a small license fee so that they don't have to mention me in the credits for the app, because I use a BSD license, which basically says if you use this code, you have to say it's from Coconetics.
Sure.
And you can pay, I think, 75 euros, I set it at, to not have to do that. So you can just say, well, sort of, I invented that. Or if you use it in a client project, the client might not want to have credits for other persons also in the app. That's just not nice. So I wouldn't be that sad if Apple would more or less give us an Objective-C-based interface for core text.
Mm.
Now, that's only half of an answer to your question, because that would only take care of the rendering.
That's right. Yeah, I mean,
so
we need the editing.
The second part, we always see Apple having some APIs that they first keep to themselves. And the reason they state is it's not stable enough, it might change. But in the past, Apple, once they have reached a certain level where they are confident and feel that the API is stable enough to be publicized, then they will do that. To give one example, view controller containment, which I'm pretty sure they had in place one way or the other for navigation controller and tap bar controller before the iPad, and with the iPad with the split view controller. I'm pretty sure it was already in there more or less the same as it's today now, but now they more or less cleaned up the headers and created some documentation. It stands to argue, you can still argue about the quality of the documentation, but it's sufficient so that they can give it to the developers. So in short, I'm pretty sure that somebody at Apple is working on this. It's just a matter of priorities. And how does Apple prioritize? Well, it's a matter of how many radars people file for certain enhancements. So if many people say, oh, I need a rich text component, I need a sort of a UI text view that also supports NS attributed strings or something like that, I'm pretty sure if there are enough requests for that, Apple will be working with it. It's just last year was the year of iCloud. And actually this year is still going on as iCloud is being worked on more and more. The current big problems with iCloud are still with synchronizing core data over iCloud. From colleagues, I get many many of them saying that the combination of core data plus iCloud is still very shaky. And sometimes it loses data, and then you need to have your own Sentinel files that so that you know if there was a database, but the database got corrupted or got deleted, and then you can restore it. It's a total mess. But
yeah, I think I've heard similar things actually.
But iCloud is the big thing, the big driver that Apple defined in summer last year as the next big thing. And so they are still pouring their resources into this. And once they have gotten it to a stage where it's more or less ubiquitous difficult word, and also working well on iOS as well as on the Mac, then I'm pretty sure they will use the ample resources to give us other new exciting things. And a rich text editor is such a basic thing for any platform that I think it must have a high priority. And
presumably you're quite happy to for them not to bring that out with your rich text editor.
Well, as I said, it's interesting to be sort of a pioneer at the one end and be able to provide something to people that the original platform vendors don't. But everything has got a certain lifespan, and I think even if Apple were to give us full blown everything included rich text editing in iOS 6, then it will still be like say 9 to 11 months or so until most of the people will be on iOS 6. So if you're going to support iOS 5, then I still have from the point on where iOS 6 is public, I will probably have a good year. So we're talking like the next 1.5 years. I don't really need to worry.
Yeah, that's very philosophical.
Now, the other thing is you can clearly see that there's some work that's going on, or that there are parts that have become public, like for example the UI text input protocol, where you define positions in a document as a subclass of viewer text position, and ranges inside of documents that have like a start position and an end position. And that's all kind of public and worked out and everything. And if you look into the messaging that goes on with the regular views that editing, they implement UI text input, but they also implement additional hooks sort of for the selection of the text and for the magnifying glass. And these are sort of, they didn't achieve this level of confidence that's necessary for them to be making this public. And so it's my feeling that we are pretty close to this becoming available as well. But from these APIs becoming public to you actually having a view, UI rich text editing view of sorts, is still a big step. Because I think what's going to happen first is that Apple will give us all the hooks they use themselves, but you would still have to create your own editing view. So I would more or less update my component with the additional protocols to get the system magnifying glass instead of my own reverse engineered one, and the whole thing would continue to work as it does.
Sounds good.
Yeah. But who knows? Apple doesn't tell us what they do. They constantly surprise us. But if we
do, especially with the odd rejection now and again.
Yeah. But if we learned one thing, then they are interested in strengthening the platform. And we all know rich text display is becoming more and more important as the devices get larger. Now, if you just have a very small screen on an iPhone, well, if you have fancy rich text display or not, it's not so much of an importance as if you are displaying full page digital magazines and catalogs.
I think it's also as the iPad especially becomes more of a content creation device. Mm-hmm. You know, rather than just consuming content like you do on Flipboard or Google Currents. If you're creating content, you need the editing capabilities. You need that rich text editing. Mm-hmm. And if they want to see the iPad really excelling as a content creation device, then I think they need that control.
Well, I don't think they have any kind of stress to having to try to get more people to buy the iPad.
No, I don't think they do.
But you're probably right. I think like the first 1 or 2 years of the iPad, it was clearly positioned as a consumption device. And now that Apple has published the iWork apps on the iPad and the latest additions like iPhoto on the iPad or iMovie on the iPad, that is pointing towards this direction of people are more and more using the iPads to create stuff with, or people are taking the iPad on road trips and leave their laptops at home.
Definitely.
Yeah. So how do you travel? Do you still take a MacBook with you or do you go iPad only?
We go iPad only to client meetings. I've got some great little apps on there now that they let us wireframe stuff live with the client right on the iPad. So yeah, I take my iPad with me, leave my MacBook at home.
So what kinds of apps are these? Can you give us a couple of examples?
Yep. There's we use iMockups and Blueprint, and we're coming home from a client meeting on the train or in the back of a car, and we can be wireframing the app on the way home before we get back to the office. Mm-hmm. Or we do it live with the client, just sort of throw around some ideas. Various kind of we use Sketchbook, for instance, just to kind of throw very, very rough ideas around.
Sketchbook, isn't that the Autodesk sketch?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's just an example. I personally have got loads of these these sort of graphics apps on the iPad because I love the way it's so tactile.
So what, do you use a pen?
No.
No, finger. Just your finger.
Finger, but I am looking at getting one of the Wacom, I think it's Wacom bamboo styluses.
Aren't those the ones that use Bluetooth for pressure sensitivity?
Do you know? I don't know. I don't know how they do it. I just know they're meant to be very good.
Whenever I'm drawing, I've had a look at two kinds of styluses. One was, the first one I got was 1 year ago. It's called Pogo Stick, which is a very thin thing. And then I backed the Cosmonaut, which is more or less like a big crayon style. Mm. And that's really comfortable. I do all my draw something playing with that.
Oh, right. You're another draw something fan. I haven't actually played it yet.
It's difficult not to be sucked in there because my wife plays it and my cousin plays it and she got... It's like you start collecting people that you draw back and forth. And
yeah. I've resisted. I know that if I went down that road, I'd never escape. So well, stayed away for now.
You wouldn't get any work done on the right. on the train. You would be playing draw something all the time. So are you still there?
Yes. Sorry, still here.
All right. Hey, we already have like 40 minutes now. I think we've covered most of the basics. Let's quickly touch on there's another thing that we haven't revealed so far to the audience. Actually, you are one of the people who bought my DT Rich Text Editor component.
That is correct.
Now,
yes.
How do you like it?
It's great. I mean, it does everything we want it to do. When we actually bought it, it was still just coming out of beta. I don't know where it is at the moment.
Well, there's no sort of real transition between beta and everything. It's like I'm like Google. It's constantly in beta.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's great because the good thing about it was that it came with all the source code. I mean, at the time, we did need to make some minor modifications. We didn't do that in the source code itself. We extended the classes. Mm-hmm. But it did just what we wanted it to do. Obviously, I can contact yourself if I have any, or when I did have issues with it, or trying to get it working. And it was one of the few components, in fact, possibly the only component we found that you could buy off the shelf as a commercial component. We didn't want to spend lots of time and lots of money creating a control that, you know, we felt the operating system should be giving you for free anyway. Mm. It wasn't in our development budget, and so it was from our point of view, it was much more cost effective to buy it off the shelf from you.
Yeah, well, I intentionally set a very low price comparatively, so that it's a no-brainer for people like you saying, okay, it's like five hours or so of what I would charge my clients. And in these 5 hours, I could never get anything working. Come to think of it, I should probably charge more. But I also set it as low because there's always some changes that are happening in the underlying DT Core text. So just to give a brief overview, for anything that's related to displaying text, I already said before, there's this DT Core Text open source project. But then there's additional components that also come into play for the entire component. One is for the display of the selection and the magnifying glass, which I had to reverse engineer to look like the original one. Then the second thing is you have rich text cut and copy support by means of web archive. So if you select some text in Safari, this text gets put on the pasteboard in a web archive format. And I have an open source component for that, DT Web Archive, that allows you to basically get at the rich text. And the last thing is obviously this all these interactions with UI text input and auto correction and text selection and text marking, which are two different kinds of things. So there's lots of it's a ongoing thing. And just recently, I've started to work on support for lists. Like you want to be able to click on a bullet button, and then the current line turns into a list item. And if you
that's actually what we did actually look at doing that. And I went some way to running with what we had in DT Rich Text Editor and trying to put it in ourselves, but the client turned around and said they didn't need that at that point, so we left it.
So I will eventually get to that, but I'm basically saying that I have the feeling that there's so much more that can be added here because it's such a complex project that I wouldn't feel comfortable charging much more money. I sort of want to give...
liked it at the price we got it at.
I want to give the people the impression, well, it's still underway. And if there's something missing that you need, we can talk about getting it added. But it's more or less you take it, subclass it, and add your own things, your special...
Yeah, I mean, that's the approach we took initially.
All right. So you're saying that it was the only, or was it one of few commercial components for rich text editing? Is there anything else?
I think it was the only commercial one we found, I think. I actually come from I spent a lot of years doing development for Windows. Mm-hmm. And of course, you've got a whole wealth of commercial components out there. But on iOS, I think that's a market that's going to expand rapidly in the next few months and years. But as it stands at the moment, there's actually not that many commercial off-the-shelf components that you can buy for iOS.
Well, there are many commercial components, but not very many that work in this area that I did.
There's a couple of
companies and websites that are more or less trying to establish marketplaces for components, specifically iOS components, but they generally like to hedge their bets and make it more global. So they also have Windows components and Android components and PHP and JavaScript templates, what will have you. So, okay. So, I think everything said and done. Are you going to attend this year's WWDC?
No, we won't be going this year. Maybe next year.
So you already decided you're not going to be a victim of distress that everybody else has had.
No. So you still none the wiser on when it's going to be.
Do you think it would be an advantage to Apple if they made this information available sooner, even if they don't have tickets, so that at least people could schedule around these?
I think I don't think Apple really have to worry about it. I mean, it would make it better for everybody. Everybody else, but as far as Apple were concerned, they're still going to get the same number of people. It's still going to sell out just as quickly.
Well, that's the thing about Apple. I can understand that a small startup wants to be not predictable, end quote. But once it's grown to the size that you have so many people being dependent on what Apple decides, I think they kind of need to course correct a little bit there.
Yeah, well, I think there's going to be a little bit more of that over the next couple of years or so. And they're in such a dominant position now. I think that they're going to start getting hassled from all kinds of fronts. Mm-hmm.
So, all right, let's wrap it up here. What's the website? People can read more about your work and your app.
Sure. So, our company website is www.dotrix.com. We have a blog where we talk about what's happening in the mobile space, which is www.intraction.com. That's in-traction.com. And you can find out all about the Simple app at www.simple.com.
Great. Well, thanks, Kevin, for being on the show and basically helping me out getting a show together without not having to do any kind of work myself. let's do that again sometime.
All right.
And have a nice day and good luck with your Simple app.
Thank you very much. It's great to talk to you.
This show has been a Coconetics production, and as usual, I'd like to encourage your feedback. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at oliver@coconetics.com or tweet me at Coconetics. If you want to give me audio feedback or leave some interesting comments for me to play on the show, please call my Google Voice mailbox 415-860-4324, or we can also always do a Skype interview. Just contact me if you have something to say on air.